Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Richard W. Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he's written 10 books about video poker, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Richard W. Munchkin has played blackjack, backgammon, and poker professionally, and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob.
I'm Richard.
And tonight in studio, our guest is Andy Block. Hello, Andy.
How are you doing?
We're going to give Andy a proper introduction in a bit. We're going to talk about a few things first. If he wants to join in, then he is welcome to, and he will speak unintroduced, but welcome. Usually, I spend about 5 minutes or so talking about some aspect of video poker advantage play. Tonight, I actually want to speak of automobiles as an advantage play. Last Saturday, the Palms, one of our sponsors, gave away a 2011 Mercedes E350. I had one ticket out of 40. One person didn't show up, so I had one chance in 39. I ended up with the $250 consolation prize. Poor me. Before the drawing, somebody asked me about whether, if I won, I would take the car with a retail value of about $55,000 or the cash buyout of $44,000. This is what I want to talk about tonight. Possibly there was a free play option instead of cash. Whether there was or wasn't and how to deal with that, that's going to be a topic for a different show. When a casino gives you a car, whatever car they're offering is unlikely to be the exact car that you would be planning to buy. Even if it's store credit, like they would give you $55,000 towards anything Mercedes-Benz of Henderson would sell you, if that was the option, Mercedes may not have been the mark that you wanted. You may have wanted a Yugo or a Rolls or whatever it was, whatever your desires are. So there's something called an automobile auction. Now in Vegas, it happens a couple times a month, and there they sell used cars to dealers. You have to be a dealer to actually bid at the auction. So as a consumer, you have to be represented by a dealer. Now you can get that same car with 8,000 miles on it, used, full factory warranties, for about $38,000 at the automobile auction rather than go through the dealer. So would I rather have the car at pay the $55,000, the taxes on $55,000, or would I rather have the same car, have money left over, and the tax burden be a lot less because now I'm paying taxes on the $44,000 gift, and the registration on a used car is significantly less than it is on a new car. Now, if I wanted a different model, if I wanted a Chevy or a Ford or a Lexus or BMW, whatever, it's all at the auction. You go there a couple days before, you look at all the ones of the style you want, and you decide what you want him to make a bid on, and you make the deal. And so in our case, we were after this was in 2009, we wanted a 2008 particular kind of Mercedes. And so there were 4 or 5 of them of that model. And so we picked them in order. And, you know, if this one doesn't go above this or this one doesn't go above that, take that. So we got the car. The car we wanted, it had a $38,000 price at Mercedes of Henderson if we wanted to buy it. The same car at the auction was $29,000. actually 28,000, and there's a $1,500 service charge for the guy who goes. If you're interested in this, send us an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can send it to me personally, bobdancerlasvegas@yahoo.com. I'll send you the relevant fact sheet, and you can go from there if you want it. Munchin, does that sound like an advantage play to you?
Well, there are two different issues here. One is I agree that it's a good idea to buy a car that's 1 or 2 years old, still under factory warranty, and that sounds like a really good way to do it. Your guy who can go to the auctions. But getting back to whether to take the car or the cash, you'd be leaving a lot of money on the table by taking $44,000 instead of the $55,000 car. I won a car at Palace Station about 30 years ago.
Car a day in May.
Yeah, exactly. And they had progressive slots that we were playing back then, and so I had lots of tickets. And an $11,000 discount is way too much. So even if you don't want to take the car and resell it yourself, maybe you'd get 50 for it. At the time that I did it...
No, you would not get 50 because you're not selling it as a new car. You're selling it as a used car.
Yeah, you're selling it as a used car with less than 100 miles
on it. $35,000 for it.
No. Well, anyway, in the case of when I won the car back then, there was a dealer here in town that said, oh, they want to give you this much cash? Well, I'll give you this much more. And it was about $3,000 more than the casino was willing to give us for the car. So I would say take the car, resell it to another dealer, or sell it yourself on the street. I think you'll do better than the $44,000. Much better.
Okay. And I think the auction's a good plan.
So, yeah, the auction's a good deal.
All right. So we are going to agree to disagree on that one. Let me do one of our commercial words. And then we'll start talking to Andy Block. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody anywhere else in the world. There's a new sign-up promotion going on where you get $150 free play over 3 months. To qualify, you must be a Nevada resident and never have had a card at the South Point in the past and sign up by tomorrow, September 2nd. This coming Monday is Labor Day, and South Point is offering 2x points for video poker or 5x points for slots. Next Wednesday's free video poker class at the Palms will be 9-7 double bonus at 1 o'clock and 9-6 double double at 3 o'clock. These games are both return in the 99% range. They are the strongest of this game type that is offered at the South Point. This is lower than I usually teach the games. But the reason I do it is for three reasons. These are core games that a lot of people play. And so if they're going to play them, even if they're not the best games in the house, they might as well play them right. Number two, in a couple weeks, I'll be teaching double-double bonus quick quads, which is my personal game of choice on double point days at South Point. And so to play the quick quads version, you need to know the basic version. So we need to know double-double bonus. And third, the strategy variations between the 99% versions and the versions of both games, which are slightly over 100%, are very minor. And we will talk about them in class as to where they occur. So that is next Wednesday, 1 o'clock. All right, Munch, why don't you tell us who Andy Block is and how come he's sitting next to me?
Okay, well, Andy Block was a member of the MIT blackjack team, made famous in the movie 21, and then moved on to professional poker. He's got over $5 million in tournament poker winnings, came in second to Chip Reese in the horse event the first year, and has a degree in engineering from MIT and a law degree from Harvard. and now he's playing poker for a living. So I'm sure his parents are very happy about that.
Hi.
Andy Block, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
It's good to be here. My parents are very proud.
Yeah.
Are they?
Well, you know, once their friends start telling him, hey, I just saw your son on TV, then they kind of turned around. And
that always makes a difference.
Yeah.
Munch mentioned the blackjack movie, 21. Now, the guy who played was represented by the Kevin Spacey, John C., we'll call him tonight, was highly offended. He thought the book changed half of what really happened and the movie changed the other half. Now, I read one review that you wrote afterwards. Tell our audience, what did you think of that movie?
Well, at first I thought I was going to hate the movie. After I read a synopsis of the plot, I thought it would make not just, you know, the professor look bad and MIT kind of look bad, but the team look bad. And then after watching the movie, I kind of liked, there was a few scenes I actually felt somewhat realistic. It felt, you know, like it made me feel like we felt when we were actually playing. And the whole team dynamic, how the team has some controversy, splits up, and gets back together again and reforms as a new team at the end. That I really liked, because that's what happened with the MIT Blackjack team. We didn't have some mean professor that was leading the team.
And turn you in at the end and sell you out.
Which is why John didn't really like the movie so much, because, you know, he was if anybody could be credited as being the head of the team, the founder of the team, it would be John. And I think I was sitting next to him when we watched the premiere at Planet Hollywood.
And he objected to being portrayed as a sleazebag, huh?
it really wasn't him at all. He wasn't a professor. We never had a professor who was running the team at any point in time. And certainly by the time I got involved, we didn't have, like, secret investors. It was the players and investors were very much the same.
So I wanted to talk about how you got involved in the team and Advantage Play in the first place, because I think this is a really good lesson for listeners. This is exactly what Advantage players do, and why don't you tell us about the game Hickok?
Yeah, so after my first job after college, I kind of got bored. I was looking for some hobbies. I started going to Foxwoods Casino to play some poker, but I noticed they had this game called Hickok 6-Card Poker, and it just seemed interesting, and I don't know if I had played it the first time or just took down the rules and then went home, did some back-of-the-envelope calculations, and then decided, hey, there's something here. Maybe this game could be beaten. I mean, I guess I was naive in a good way in that, you know, most people would say there's no way that the casino would screw up and wouldn't even bother thinking about it. But, you know, back then, hey, I had some time. I wrote a computer program on an old Apple II machine, and it took, like, it looked like a couple of days to run, and I had to add up all the results by hand. I had to hand code some of it in the machine language to run fast enough. And it came up pretty surprising. The player with a basic strategy had a 2% advantage. And I got a new job. I got a new computer that was running a little bit faster. I was able to actually simulate it more. I figured out that taking advantage of all the information at the table, not quite counting cards because all the cards were face up. So you did count. I had to count a point system, how much a straight draw was worth, how much, you know, dead cards were worth, and you could figure out exactly what your EV was and what the right play was. So I figured all that out, and you came up with like a 5-6% advantage you can have. Which is huge.
Yeah.
How big of a max bet?
That's the problem. $50 max bet. Well, and the game was slow. We got about 15 hands an hour. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking, hey, this is fun. I can go and make some money. And I did. I went and played a little bit on my own.
Could you play multiple hands?
The table wasn't full, you could play two or three hands. And it was to your advantage to play as many as you could because you'd see more cards also. So that would give you more information. It was dealt face up. It was like Caribbean Stud, but dealt face up. And everybody started with three cards. And then more like Let It Ride, I guess, in that respect. I was fine-tuning the strategy. Had a simplified advanced strategy. You know, you didn't have to do the simulations in your head.
Advanced strategy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I had this whole point system and, you know, would practice on my computer. And I was thinking, hey, you know, it'd be great if we had a team to do this. And I heard the rumors. I knew the rumors about the MIT Blackjack team. My brother even was I think he went to like one or two practices. So I was thinking, hey, maybe I should try to contact them.
But you were already out of school at the time.
I was already out of school, but I was working in the Boston area. And I started going to this home game in the Boston area on Wednesday nights. And I won a small tournament at Foxwoods, a poker tournament at Foxwoods. Paid like, you know, to what to me was like a huge sum, like $4,000. And at that game was one of the other main founders of the MIT team. I think Mr. M, he's called in some of the documentaries about the team. And he was at the game, and he wanted to start a poker team where we trained some of the MIT students to go down and play poker for the summer. That didn't end up working out so well. But I told him about this Hickok work that I had done, and, you know, we should do that. So the poker team kind of morphed into the Hickok six-card poker team. We ended up making, like, something that was a lot for me, $75,000. But it was
score on a $50 max.
A $50 max. We put in 2,500 hours.
$30 an hour.
$30 an hour was what we made.
Which
and probably $30 or more in comps per hour. So it almost was worth more just from the comps.
Well, there's a lot of listeners of our show would love a $30 an hour play.
It was great. It was great, except, you know, of course, we couldn't raise it. And then the casino realized that people were beating them. They figured that we cost them $1 million or $2 million, but they were looking at it, what they would have earned from the average player who was betting what we were betting, who was playing that at like 6% or something disadvantaged.
Somebody who played that bad would be betting $5 a hand.
That's the other issue too.
Yeah.
Rochambeau. Rochambeau.
There's a segue.
I'm fascinated by this. This is rock, paper, scissors. Rock beats scissors, scissors beats paper, paper beats rock. It's said that you were the world champion at Rochambeau. How does one become a world champion at Rochambeau?
Well, I've retired.
Ah.
But a few years ago, you know, some friends.
I was going to supervise a playoff between you and Munchkin tonight.
Some friends, you know, they would love to. The Tilt Boys, Phil Gordon, Ray Furst, Perry Friedman, they, you know, would gamble on lots of things. And they would gamble high stakes rock, paper, scissors all the time, Rochambeau. And, you know, we set up one barge. We had a World Rochambeau Championship, and I won it. There were only 8 people in it, but
small world.
but since then, it's grown over the years. We didn't have one this year, but they even filmed it for the World Series of Poker one year. There were, I think there was 128 players one year. I think that's the year that they filmed it, and it was $10,000 seat to the winner. And the 2,800 went to cancer research.
So. Nice.
Well, good.
So, is there any strategy involved in this game at all?
It's poker without cards, really, because it's bluffing. You're trying to get into the mind of your opponent, figuring out what their patterns are, what their tendencies are. You know, one very simple level: does a guy go rock too much? Then a very basic strategy against that player would be to go paper all the time. Obviously, they're going to figure that out and start going scissors on you. So, you know, you very quickly realize the game theory optimal strategy is to go perfectly random one third of the time each. But, you know, we're humans. We're trying to outsmart our opponents. And you can't be completely random. Although people used various techniques to randomize. Annie Duke won it one year by using the numbers on serial number on a dollar bill to randomize her play. So, yes, you can win if just by playing completely randomly. But then, you know, it's random.
But yeah,
you run out of dollar bills pretty soon.
I find this bizarre that so many winning poker players seem to like to gamble with no edge.
There is an edge. You think that there is no edge, but there is an edge. First of all, like I said, you figure out your tendencies of your opponents. There are tells that people give off, and then you can try to give off reverse tells. I mean, it is poker without cards. It's all the psychological aspects of poker.
I can see where they would say to themselves that there is an edge in that particular game. But it seems that a lot of poker players like to bet sports with no edge or play craps with no edge, or and this seems very different than blackjack players. So I'm interested in your experience in those two worlds. Are they as different as I think they are?
There are different classes of poker players, but there certainly are a lot that just love to gamble at anything, and it's lucky for them that they've learned how to be a good poker player, because if they didn't, they'd be broke. And some of them make their money playing poker and then lose it betting sports, betting blackjack, playing craps. And you know,
but
we don't
do you know
like
any blackjack players that way?
Not very many, but I do know there were a couple of people on the MIT team, believe it or not, that had gambling problems and would, you know, play slot machines and do other things like that without an edge. Not very many of them, though. I think for the most part, it actually helped people out, because once you learn how to play a game with an edge, you don't want to play a game that doesn't have an edge. Once you know that you can beat the casino, why do you want to go and throw your money away?
Well, that theory doesn't seem to work for poker players.
Well, because they're not beating, they don't know how to beat the casino. They just know how to beat other players. So it's a different aspect.
One of the things Chip Reese said to me was that that the money came so easily, they just lost respect for it and felt like, well, if I blow at betting sports, I can always just go back to the poker table and make more.
Right. That's exactly what a lot of people think. They can go broke because they can win more. To them, like Kelly Criterion means nothing, because they think I can go broke, I can make more. I can always find someone to stake me. Whereas, you know, if you're most of the advantage players, they never want to go broke. You don't want to go broke because...
I don't want to go broke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to go broke.
Chip Reese, you mentioned your the most famous poker success was coming in second place to Chip Reese in the $50,000 buy-in horse competition, where horse, the first H stands for Hold'em and O stands for Omaha, and there's Raz and et cetera. So the finals went some ungodly number of hands, 500 hands or something. So obviously which one you won was largely a matter of luck. One of the things you're noted for in that one is you bent the cards, obviously in front of people, daring them to catch you. They did catch you. They did penalize you. What tell us about this?
Well, I wasn't saying I was daring them to catch me. What happened is at the time, they were, I think they were a little bit lazy. There were a couple of people who aren't running the tournament anymore, but there were, you know, four people in the tournament that, you know, didn't really care about protecting the game when they would use old cards. They didn't start, like nowadays at the World Series, they start every tournament with brand new cards and every
it's
day of the tournament.
It's a $50,000 buy-in and they're trying to save $2 on a deck of cards?
And that's a crazy thing. And this has happened throughout the entire World Series. The World Series, you know, is like 40-something different poker tournaments. And I had complained, even on day two, you know, that we'd have bad cards. And it was cards that might have been used like in the low ball game where people are squeezing. So it tends to be like all the low cards tended to have nail marks in them from people squeezing. And, you know, I sit down to play at this $50,000 buy-in event, which the house is raking 4%. So that's $2,000 per player. We sit down and the cards are, I actually didn't even point it out at first. Somebody else noticed it at the table. But it's one of my pet peeves. I actually caught somebody at Fox was doing it. And then they actually kicked the guy out the next time he came in. So, you know, it's something that happens. People do on purpose, and people do it by accident. Mark the cards with their nails. They're too hard on it. And, you know, they didn't want to, like, change the deck. So I bent the cards so that they had to. Four person came over and said, like, hey, did you bend the cards? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, I'm going to have to give – I should – you know, it's a penalty if you bend the cards. I'm like, okay, give me a penalty. So he gave me a penalty for, I don't know, 10-15 minutes. Meanwhile, during that time, it gave me a chance to go and talk to the tournament director, and they brought in new cards to everybody.
Did the other players intentionally slow play during your 10 minutes kind of in support of your position so you wouldn't get blinded to death, or did they?
It was
dog eat dog, man. He's out of here. Let's play fast.
I don't think they played fast or slow. There were a couple people I think that thought like I created too much of a scene, but the thing is, this wasn't the if I hadn't created a scene, I don't know if they would have bothered to change it. It had been a problem throughout the tournament, and you'd think, and they had told me, like, oh, yeah, we'll start at least a $50,000 with brand new cards. And every day, too, they said, okay, we'll start 8 day twos with brand new cards, which is just crazy to me. I mean,
you
just
would think if you went and talked about it on camera to the ESPN guys, I bet the cards would get changed very quickly.
Right, right. Well, this was early on before the Well, they had the cameras just roaming around; they weren't watching those particular cards. I mean, those any particular table very closely, but. You know, and then I went on to finish second, so I guess it didn't hurt me too much.
Yeah, now, how was, as he mentioned, there was some ungodly long heads-up play with you and Chip. And
right, like, well, we first of all, the day two went really long. It was scheduled for a three-day event, day two, we didn't get down to the final nine players at the final table until, like, 10 in the morning. So they had us come back at 10 p.m. It only took like 2 to 3 hours for us to get to, from nine to heads up, and then maybe four, and then we played like until like 10 in the morning again, 8 to 10 in the morning again, and I mean, we were both pretty much exhausted. We had a huge chip stacks between the two of us compared to the blinds, so that I knew it would take a while. When I sat down, I said, this is going to take a while, but I had no idea it would take that long.
Hmm. Well, it didn't have to. You could have gone all in on your second one.
Or, right. Well, I had Chip all in four times. So I could have. There are four different times I could have won. Once he had me in bad shape with kings against nines. And the other three times I was, well, once I was a big favorite, another small favorite, and another small underdog. So, yeah, I ran the numbers. And 93% of the time I would have won one of those four all-ins. Mm. So sometimes I tell people I have 93% of a bracelet.
Well, then he died, and they named the tournament after him. Now, if you had won, then you would have to die, and they could name the tournament after you. Are you sure this is a bad result for you?
I think if I could have lost anybody, Chip Reese is the guy I'd want to lose to. But, I mean, yeah, I don't think there's any causation there.
Don't think so. Okay.
While we're on the poker subject, is there anything you can tell us about Full Tilt?
I wish there was. I really know very little about what's going on right now.
Hmm. Okay. We're going to keep asking people. Sooner or later, somebody's going to be able to tell us something. There's a book out. It's called The Pocket Idiot's Guide to Poker Tells. Your name's associated with that. Now, how is that book different than, say, I mean, Mike Carroll has written books on tells, as have some others. How is your book different?
Yeah, well, it's not called, like, the Advanced Beginner Guide to Poker Tells. It is called the Pocket Idiot's Guide, and it's a pocket, and it's, well, it's not for idiots, really, but it's a small book. It's easy to read. It's really quick. It's easy to carry around and, you know, read it through a couple of times. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of the same information that you're going to get from Mike Carroll's book. I love those pictures in Mike Carroll's book, those, you know, 1970s. It's just funny looking at what people are wearing and what their hair is like and all that stuff.
There's no backward baseball caps in his book.
And the iPod hadn't been invented. So.
Yeah, I don't know if he updated the pictures yet in his book.
I hope not. So, for a lawyer, it seems you've been arrested a lot of times. Why don't you tell us about getting arrested in Monte Carlo?
I'm sitting next to this miscreant over
here. So far, I think I've been arrested five times. Four of them involving blackjack.
Tell us about Monte Carlo.
None of them was I ever actually convicted, or if I was, it got reversed on appeal. The first time was with the MIT blackjack team.
Uh-huh.
I was playing blackjack in Monte Carlo, the principality, not the casino.
Over in Europe, that little kind of country.
Yep, just squeezed in between France and Italy. And we had gone on this whole European trip to went around, started in London, went all the way around, and we were in Monte Carlo here to play. It was three of us. This is talked about in Ben Mezrich's second book about the MIT blackjack team called Busting Vegas, about Semyon Dukac, although there was a couple of inaccuracies there. There were only three of us, and, you know, we didn't really get beaten up or feel like we were, like...
Inaccuracies in a Ben Mezrich book?
No,
it's
no.
It's hard to believe.
Never. But... You know, we were playing there. We were winning a little bit. I was the big player. Semyon was. We were counting cards. We were doing a couple of advanced techniques. Nothing illegal. No marking of cards. We weren't even hole carding or anything like that.
Were you bending the cards?
We were not bending the cards. We weren't touching the cards. We weren't pass posting or anything. I mean, we did not cheat. We were not cheating. But you know, Semyon at that time was already in the Griffin book, and you know they looked us up and found him. You know, they were suspicious, of course, about how we were playing and that we were winning. And they took Katie into the back room, but they let us play for a little bit longer. And then they took us to the back room and held us there for a while. And
you continued playing when one of your teammates was already back.
We couldn't.
It was only one of the girls.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, she had went to the ladies' room, and either on the way there or on the way back something, they had stopped her, and we're in the middle of a shoe. We got a few rounds to go. We're going to stop when they tell us to stop. Right. Hey, it's a civilized country. Of course, we don't know what the legal system is like. You know, we don't know if they're going to make an example of us or what they're going to do. I mean, so it's a little bit scary. You know, they had her, so we're not going to, if this happened in Vegas, we probably would have, the rest of us would have run out of the casino and then worked. We would have made sure, that player was okay, but you don't sit around in the casino and give up your IDs and stuff.
Right.
I mean, in this case, we're in a foreign country. We're not abandoning her. But we're not gonna leave the shoe with a good count.
No, let's not be silly.
She wouldn't want us to. She'd be like, "What are you crazy? Finish the shoe and then come get me."
Yes.
So we ended up we finished the shoe. They stop us, ask us for our passports, take us to the back room behind this mirrored wall, and Simeon says "I demand to see," in this thick Russian accent that he's got. "I demand to see." Our ambassador. And they're laughing at us. They get all three of us to sit in the corner so they can have a camera on us. And this is in mid-90s, 95, before the internet was really that popular and stuff. And, they had us, all three of us get together so they could get a shot with a camera on us. And we heard them on the phone with Griffin Investigations. That's the only thing we can understand. The rest was in French. And they're laughing at us and ha ha, family portrait. And finally there's a knock on the door and a guy comes in with a gun on his holster and they say, "Hey, here's your ambassador right now." Uh-huh. He's a police inspector for the Monte Carlo police. Then they still not sure what they're gonna do. Then they decided, the police told them that they had to pay us. They weren't very happy about that. So, okay, now it seems like it's going to be okay. They take us to the police station in the back of this prisoner transport. They had 50 police officers there, lining the central. This was in the Café de Paris casino, the American-style casino there. So there's all these police cars and everything. I mean, just for the three of us. And we have no weapons or anything, of course. They race us down to the police station on the course of the Monte Carlo Grand Prix that was going to be there that weekend that we were going to get comped to. Unfortunately, we didn't get to stay in the country that long.
Sometimes best to leave.
And the scary part was they asked us how we got there. We told them we had a rental car, and they said, "We want to drive that to the station." And now, I'm thinking, okay, if we get through this, it's going to be okay. But why would they need to see our car? Why would they need, it wouldn't happen in the U.S. At least you think that we have, our constitutional, Fourth Amendment, the Constitution would prevent them from searching our car.
The Fourth Amendment in Monaco?
But obviously it doesn't apply there. So I don't know what they're, I'm not in law school yet, so at this time. So, I don't know what the law is there or not. And, they go and they... The two of the other two guys, Simeon and Katie, are back in the station, and I'm there with the Monte Carlo police officer, and he wants to see searching the car, and I'm like, what is he? I'm worried that he's gonna plant something on us. Anyway, long story short, he didn't go and plant anything on us. I thought we were safe, and a few hours later, they let us go, gave us a nice police escort to the border, and. Now I have problems every time I come back to Monte Carlo, but it's okay.
Interesting. Wow. All right. So what we're going to do is take a brief respite from Andy. We're going to cover a few other things. And then because there's another discussion we're going to be talking about, something about the Palms, where Andy's likely to speak up there too. At the end of the show, we have some other questions for Andy, depending on how much time that we have left after we do some other things. What I want to talk about is the Palms Choose Your Destiny drawing. We mentioned this last week that we were going to talk about it. I posted it on VP Free, and several people spoke up. The way the drawings work at the Palms every Friday and Saturday in September is five people chosen by their play during the week, and they get a guaranteed $1,500, or they play a random game which has an average score, mean, of $1,667. So, but you could go as low as $123 or as high as $3,210. The average is $1,667. So the question is it a good idea to take the guaranteed $1,500 or gamble it up? You are paying a 10% premium for the safety. Now, I mentioned that I would definitely go for the higher EV. I would gamble it up. Several people said, well, maybe at 1500, but if it was $1.5 million, you probably would chicken out there, and they're probably right. So it does have to do partly with how big your bankroll is and whether or not $1,500 is a lot to you. The most people, though, would have a reasonable bankroll. To get called, you probably would have played $100,000 coin in or more during the week just to have enough tickets in the barrel that you were called. Some of the players are going to play $400,000 during that week. So there's a lot of play. And so these are not people like who have, well, I only have $400 to my name, so I'm obviously going to take the $1,500 because this is a huge amount of money. But, so, Munchkin, you put this as a poll on some blackjack forum.
Yeah,
what did you find out?
I put it up on Blackjack Info, which is a site for card counters. And it's split basically 60-40, 60% taking the higher EV and 40% saying they would take the $1,500. And to me, I think the takeaway from this is that, and these are people who are card counters that consider themselves, knowing enough to play with an advantage. And to me, the takeaway is that far too many people are far too risk averse. They're afraid of risk, and they shouldn't be. They should be going after the higher EV. So, I mean, yes, whether you take the guaranteed $1,500 or gamble and end up with the $1,667, yes, it's a function of how big your bankroll is. But your bankroll would have to be tiny to make it a better play to take the sure $1,500. And even in my own case, if I were broke, if you're already broke, it doesn't matter that if you go broke again. So even in that case, I would take the higher EV.
If you're broke, it doesn't matter if you go broke again.
No, what I'm saying
can we put
like
that as a motto on
it's
our
like the
website?
Poker players,
yeah, it's like the poker players, right?
Who think they go broke?
They're driving a cab until somebody stakes them. Yeah.
All right. So,
wait,
so
Andy, did you want to add something there?
You would gamble it up here.
Of course I would gamble it up.
Of course. And you have to realize that, like, what the right bankroll you need to take this gamble, you're really only risking, like, $1,300 or something because you're guaranteed $130, whatever. Plus, like, there's prizes in between, I assume. It's
yes.
not, like,
yeah.
all or nothing. So the variance is probably, like, the square root of variance, anyway, is only, like probably, like, $500 or something.
John C. did a Kelly equals one criteria, and it came out to be $2,000. If your bankroll was $2,000.
That's smaller than I thought, but that's because
I
didn't know
what
the number
was. You'd be indifferent. You would be indifferent if you had a $2,000 bankroll.
If you don't have a $2,000 bankroll, what are you doing there?
You should not be in the casino tonight.
You were in there playing Lucky Bucks.
Oh, and that's like, the Kelly optimal bankroll, I think. And so even if you're half that bankroll, you should be taking the risk. So that, that's another thing. I mean, but although most people are, a full Kelly bet is too risky for most people. But, you see that all the time. I remember one time at the Sahara, like 10, 15 years ago, they had a double blackjack, two to one on blackjack, and with a $200 max bet. And here's this guy betting $100 or less. And I couldn't understand it because he had like 15,000 in front of him. Even if his entire bankroll was on the table, he had the enough of the bankroll to bet the $200.
Oh, well. Good. All right. So, but there are people who do wear both the belt and suspenders. So we'll see. I'm not going to be at the Palms tomorrow night. I'm going to be at another promotion. But I suspect somebody will be there and post it on VP Free as to how many of the five took the 15 and how many chickens and how many gamblers we had. Let's talk about the M. M is one of our sponsors. What promotion is going on at the M depends on which day of the week it is. On Mondays in August and in September, they have a mystery multiplier. It's either 1x, 2x, or 3x for video poker. That's times your base rate of 0.30. And it's much higher for slots, up to 10 times. Today, you're going to be there in the casino anyway to pick up your free play. Plus, in August, it was from noon to midnight. And in September, it's midnight to midnight. So those of you who want to get there earlier and get started earlier, you can do that. On Wednesdays, they have a senior slot tournament. You're eligible to play if you've had at least 500 points on your card during the past week. They also have a drawing on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. 40 names get called for cash or free play. An additional 10 people win dining certificates. The top prize is $10,000. A total of $17,000 is given away, and plus the dining certificates. You don't have to be present to win, but you need to be there before 7, which is an hour later, or your prize is forfeited. Fridays, they have a hot seat drawing at 4, 6, 8, and 10. You're eligible if you've played at least 250 points during the day and your card is in. At each of the four drawings, $3,600 in free slot play, and another 10 winners receive more than a total of $1,000 in food. Finally, their comp buffet program there is one of the best deals in town. If you play enough, you get a free buffet. And the M Buffet is, it was best in Vegas by the RJ. And that may be a slightly higher ranking than some people would give it, but it's got to be up there. It's a good buffet. And it's like their best, their seafood buffet is 1,700 points it requires to play. For $33.99 or retail, and it's yours free, and it's a very strong meal, and there's all the beer and wine you can keep down, which makes it high EV to go back and play into the casino.
If you're a drinker, you want, and this is the promotion for you.
Good. Our guest next week is going to be Steve Fezzik. Fezzik is arguably the best football handicapper around. There was every year they have a Hilton $5,000 football handicap contest. You're playing against the spread, and he won it twice in a row against a couple hundred contestants each time. This is an unheard of feat. He will be here. We're going to ask him about handicapping sports. He's associated with LVA Sports, which is the Las Vegas, our friends at the Las Vegas Advisor have a handicapping service. Those of you listeners to our show will be getting a 20% discount on the LVA Sports package should you wish to go there.
You have to mention us, right, to get that?
Yeah, you can either mention Gambling with an Edge or Bob Dancer or Richard Munchkin. It didn't say you can mention Andy Block. Sorry, Andy. I don't know.
Might as well try it.
I think you ought to try it. All right. So now we're done with the stuff that we have to talk about. So now we're back to Andy until we until we run out of time. There was a good reason you stayed around. I'm glad you did. Now, WPT, World Poker Tour, is a big one. A couple years ago, they had a contract you had to sign if you were going to be in their events. You and several others refused to sign it. And so tell us why you did that and what the net result of all that was.
Yeah, there was language in their contract which we thought would give them or somebody that would buy the WPT to give them rights to misuse, abuse our names and likenesses for whatever purposes that they wanted to, whether it was promoting a poker site or promoting their anything that involving poker, or maybe even not involving poker, maybe just involving a casino. And we didn't like that, and we went and brought a lawsuit. And then a couple of years later, we settled. They agreed to change their releases, and we agreed to drop the lawsuit. And, you know, I think it ended up being a good result overall. It not just affected them, but I think it affected the rest of the industry. When you have new leagues coming along, for example, like the Epic Poker League, mm-hmm. they talked to me and other pros, and they looked at this these contract disputes and said, hey, we want to have a contract, a release that people can sign and be happy with from the beginning. We're not trying to, yes, obviously that they're trying to, and to some degree, use the pros' image to help sell their show, but they didn't want to. They knew that the players want to be able to own their image and be able to profit from that too.
So now you're participating again in World Poker Tour events.
Right. Yes.
Very good.
Well, actually, you just brought up Epic Poker, the Epic Poker League, so we should talk about that. You you were the one guy with a card that actually won your way in the cheap way, right?
Yeah, so for people that don't know, the Epic Poker League is a new poker league.
Andy Duke was on the show a month ago, so okay. Many of our listeners know a little bit, but continue.
And you can, instead of like the World Series of Poker, where most of the events, anybody that has the money can play, you have to qualify based on your previous tournament results around the world. And only about 200-300 players qualify. But there is another way to qualify, and they have a pro-am tournament before every main event where you can, for $1,500, you can win your entry into the main event.
So it's a satellite.
It's a satellite. It's the only way you can play the event is either have a card, be one of those 300 or so players, or win the pro-am.
Or both.
Yeah, the pros are allowed. In fact, they're encouraged to play pro-ams. One of the qualifications is, in order to keep your card for the next year, you have to play in at least one pro-am. So I got mine out of the way last time. And they gave away 9 seats, and they're guaranteeing 9 seats. Even if they get 100 players, they're guaranteeing $180,000, basically, in prize money for the 9 seats. Last time, they met the guarantee. This time, it's this weekend, so it's Friday and Saturday, 2 day ones, and then...
Back at the Palms.
I love the Palms.
Good.
They're not even paying me to say that.
It's okay. They pay us. So on behalf
Except
of George and
Except they don't let me play
others.
Blackjack there. They don't even let me play blackjack tournaments. So, yeah, you know, I don't know if I love them that much. But it's at the Palms Friday and Saturday for $1,500. You can have a chance to win your entry into the main event.
So it could be positive EV if not enough people enter.
It could be positive EV. They're guaranteeing you can – I mean, if you're only going to play if it's positive, you can wait until – you can play on day 1B, which is Saturday, and make sure. But I think it's positive anyway because the TV exposure is worth a lot. If you go on, if you're an amateur and you qualify through, you win your way through the pro-am, and then you go and make the final table, and especially if you win it, you're definitely going to get a lot of TV time. You're going to be a featured. They're going to play you up a lot because there's only maximum of 9 amateurs. Last time, there were only 8 amateurs because I was one of the people that won the seat. Although most of the other players were professionals, they just hadn't yet qualified for the tour. You need to have a certain amount of tournament winnings over the last few years and your career, and there's 3 or 4 different ways that you can qualify based on your winnings and major titles. So, you know, there are a lot of pros out there that haven't qualified. There were a lot of pros that qualified that played in the tournament anyway. It's a chance to win $20,000. I was the only one that won the seat. There should have been, if the pros just performed to EV, there should have been 3 pros there. There was one that bubbled in 10th place for the seat. But I think some of the pros played it a little bit too aggressively and a little bit too loose because it was really a super satellite structure.
You didn't need to be in first place. You just need to be in the top 9.
There was more money for first. First got $25,000 plus a $20,000 seat. But ninth got $20,000. So... You know, you really want to be ninth and then work your way up to first. But there's not much. Once you get a big stack, you don't want to gamble. Now, I don't know what it's going to be like this weekend, because it depends how many people play. It might be, you know, they get 300 players, in which case it's going to be a payout structure like a normal tournament, but with the advantage, extra bonus, that you can play in the main event on TV if you make the final nine. Or there might be, you know, only 150 players or something, where you don't get anything if you don't finish in the top nine. So I don't know what's going to happen this time.
Fee, you talked about the value of TV time. Now, you do get exposure and possible endorsements, but other players can watch TV and see, can analyze your game. Is being on TV a net positive or a net detriment? I mean, like, everybody knows a lot about Daniel DeGrano now because he's been on TV a lot.
It can definitely go both ways, and you have to realize that you might have to adapt how you play based on how people perceive your play on TV, because they don't see every single hole card that you, every hand that you play. They don't show every, they don't show every hand. So people, you know, can't get that strong of a read on you, and you might get more opportunities to play. People might say, hey, I saw you on TV, I just want to play with you, when they're not very good. Yeah, they're going to be, you know, against some of the top
just
pros.
Just for the honor of losing $10,000 to you, that would really turn them on.
It's like, well, you know, it's not always $10,000, but certainly people love to play against some of the pros they see on TV. Not sure. Everybody, you know, maybe not your typical listener to this show, but you want to play with the people who want to play against the pros. So
I would think so.
If you see a pro in a game, you might want to sit down, because it's not just because of them, but because of the other people that might be there because they're there.
Some people might be hungry. Let's talk about chocolate chips. At the MGM, they have a history of sometimes a chocolate chip is a brown casino chip worth $5,000. And on occasion, they do not honor them. And have you been burned by this? Do you take special precautions not to do it? What is your experience here?
Yeah, I wasn't burned by it personally, although I was through other people on the MIT blackjack team. We had like at least one or two instances of where we lost $5,000 chips because they claimed that that player, you know, maybe that player wasn't playing under their real name, and they claimed that player wasn't a patron. So
And you weren't able to collect those?
We weren't able to collect. Maybe we probably weren't aggressive enough, but we went to the Gaming Commission. The Gaming Commission said, well, it's not a question of winning or losing. You got to go and you can sue them in regular court. And we should have been followed up on that a little bit more. But, I wasn't the one that was involved in it.
You know, I just want to add, they will cash them if you have a player's card and there's a record of them giving them to you.
Yes.
So, you know, our policy is just never take them. When the dealer tries to pay us with a $5,000 chip, the BP immediately says, give me a yellow.
Yeah. But there are some casinos where it's a lot easier, a lot better, especially if you're a poker player. If you're a known poker player, obviously playing high limits, a lot of chips, $5,000 chips will fly across the table. And, you know, they'll take those a lot easier. MGM seems to be a sore thumb in there, that it sticks out really, where I've heard a lot of people having problems, a lot of sports bettors and other
actually
people.
Mandalay also. I mean, it's an MGM property, but so is Bellagio.
Bellagio and Aria don't seem to have as big of an issue. But maybe if you're not a known poker player, you do have a problem.
Yeah.
Well, you are certainly a known poker player. We are very grateful that you came to visit with us tonight. Thank you. Munchkin, we got less than a half minute. Did you learn anything tonight?
I learned that people are too risk-averse.
Uh-huh.
Get out there and gamble, especially when you have an edge.
Uh-huh. And don't take chocolate chips.
And, oh, yeah, never take chocolate chips.
Good, even if you're in the buffet.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, go out and hit Royal Flushes. Next week, we're talking to Steve Fezzik. Night-night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard W. Munchkin. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard W. Munchkin are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. You can feel it in the air. Football is back.
I felt that one way up here.
It's the NFL on KLAV. All season long. Hard hitting. Pulse pounding. In your face football. And your favorite teams are right here. Jets, Bears, Chiefs, Browns, Texans, Patriots, and Raiders. It's the NFL on KLAV. Brought to you exclusively by Dollar Loan Center. Visit them at don'tbebroke.com. And keep it right here for dates and times of your favorite games. The NFL, Dollar Loan Center, and KLAV. This is gonna be good.
Just win, baby.
Hi, I'm Duke Liberatore.
And I'm Dr. Jan McBaron.
We are a husband and wife team.
And together, we host the number one health talk show in the nation,
Duke and the Doctor.
You can hear our show weekdays from 6 to 8 a.m. here on KLAV, 1230 a.m.
We'll discuss up-to-date health news, give away gifts, share in a laugh or two, and answer health questions from our callers.
Don't miss Stay Healthy Las Vegas with Jeff Burke from 8 to 9 a.m. Feel happy, healthy, and terrific when you tune in to Duke and the Doctor.
Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 a.m. on KLAV.
Hi, this is Todd Barton with the Barton Bishop Real Estate Group. Join our team at 11 a.m. every Friday on KLAV for How It Works in Real Estate.
And this is Chris Bishop with the Barton Bishop Real Estate Group. We will be discussing short sales, bank-owned properties, and other hot topics. Discuss with our guests each week.
And I'm Amy with the Barton Bishop Real Estate Group. Join our team every Friday at 11 a.m. on KLAV for How It Works in Real Estate.
Is your landlord taking advantage of you? Is the bank about to foreclose on your house? Have you been denied unemployment or other government benefits? Has your landlord discriminated against you? Don't give up the fight. Listen to Nevada Legal Services' new program, Legal Services On Air, every Friday afternoon at 4.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Hi, this is Tiffany Rose Thomas. Join me and custom tattoo artist and local celebrity Jerry Thomas, owners of Lucky Cat Tattoo in Las Vegas. Every Friday night at 8 p.m., we will be bringing to you a fun show inspired by the excitement of the body art industry. Custom tattoos, special guests, and more. Join Lucky Cat Tattoo's Ink Session, hosted by myself, Tiffany Rose Thomas, and custom tattoo artist Jerry Thomas, every Friday night at 8 p.m. on KLAV.
What's up, everybody? This Monday is our Labor Day Feel Good Show. We're in the feel good mood with great music and hot topics that will make you go, wow, I didn't know that. 2 to 5, we're kicking back, entertaining you as you barbecue and relax. This Monday, 2 to 5, check out the Conversations with Koji.com website for upcoming shows and past events. This is our Feel Good Labor Day Show. Where else would you want to be? We keep the conversation smoking every Monday, 2 to 5. Rain, sleet, or snow, every Monday is your Feel Good Show. And it's definitely Koji, baby.
My name's Chris, and I'm a bug guy.
My name is Mike, and I too am a bug guy.
Join us every Tuesday at 3 p.m. for our show, What's Bugging Ya?
Now we know spiders, scorpions, and cockroaches may not be your favorite thing to talk about, but we know what's crawling around your house, and you need to know how to protect you and your family from these home invaders.
You won't believe some of the things we have found in Vegas homes and businesses. And we're going to share these stories with you live on the radio.
And we'll give you the information that some of the other pest control companies don't want you to know.
Preventive Pest Control is the best in the business, and we know bugs. So be sure to listen in every Tuesday at 3 p.m. for What's Bugging You.
Oh, and be sure to check under the bed.
Love us on radio, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. We are KLAV, 1230 AM.
You're listening to KLAV, Las Vegas.